powerful is the Cox Network. So powerful that one day, the internet will let your doctor perform miracles from thousands of miles away.
Connecting to remote operating room.
Giving a whole new meaning to the term house call.
Operation complete.
The Cox Network. With multi-gig speeds now available, it's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, bringing us closer. Limited availability in select areas. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms apply. Other restrictions may apply.
You're listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Here are your hosts, Bucky Brooks and Rhett Lewis.
Raider Nation. What's happening? Welcome back to another episode of the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast alongside Bucky Brooks. I am Rhett Lewis. Great to be here with you on what has been a busy week along the path to the draft. Of course, we just had free agency kind of come and go, kind of starting to simmer down a little bit with some of those big ticket items. And now we're into the pro day circuit and we are getting closer to April 27th in the NFL draft in Kansas City. Bucky, man. Three pro days back-to-back-to-back this week with Bryce Young, with C.J. Stroud, and with Will Levis. We're going to get into each one of those specifically. But, man, this is kind of a what a busy time this has got to be for, you know, GMs, for guys that are sitting in those draft rooms now trying to formulate the boards and get those things set because you got free agency going and you're getting on the road and going to the pro day circuit. You remember that time?
I do remember that time. I remember it very, very well. Because you crisscross. And this is interesting to have three of the top quarterbacks go back to back to back. And so we saw guys start in Columbus, go to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and finish up in Lexington, Kentucky to see C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, and Will Levis compete. And so it's a great opportunity to get next to these guys because what everyone has to understand is this is really only the second time that the coaches, the head coaches in particular, have met the prospects. And so when you think about quarterbacks, it's really important that you understand not only what they bring on the field in terms of how they throw it, how they move around, what things you can do with them offensively, how they fit into your scheme, but you really have to know the person because the guys that we're talking about are guys that could come off the board within the first 10 picks. These are going to be your franchise quarterbacks. And so when you think of the relationship between the head coach, the QB1, and then how the general manager is also tied into them, that is why we've seen the contingents go around, go all over looking at these guys because it's really important. It's also why we saw Josh McDaniels show up at a lot of these workouts as well.
Sure. Yeah. And we actually, in doing the broadcast for NFL Network, had some shots of Josh there at Alabama. Of course, a pro day he's very familiar with, given, you know, ties to Bill Belichick and Belichick's ties to Nick Saban. And so they've definitely spent a lot of time in Tuscaloosa around those Alabama prospects, of which Bryce Young is one of the best we've seen to come out of T-Town in quite a while. Not even just considering the quarterback position, but overall. So we're going to get into all of those guys in depth here. C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis, Anthony Richardson is going to throw next week at the end of this month of March. So we'll add that into the mix as well. We'll bring that to you on our next Raiders NFL Draft podcast. But before we dig in to these guys who could be in play for Las Vegas at number 7 as it currently stands, let's also kind of marry this time period of draft prep with free agency, right? And for the Raiders, one of the biggest ticket items, if not the biggest, was the signing of Jimmy Garoppolo. Obviously, familiarity speaks loudly here. We talked about that in our last pod, talking about the free agency fits for the Raiders. And, you know, you got a piece out on Raiders.com now talking about what Garoppolo brings to this franchise and to this team this year. What are some of the high notes there that attracted Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler and company to a player like Jimmy for this team?
I think there are a few different things that Jimmy Garoppolo brings to the table. One, the familiarity. He not only understands Josh McDaniels in the scheme, but he understands the culture that he's trying to implement with the Las Vegas Raiders. Having spent time together with the Patriots, there are obviously some similarities, some carryover in terms of the approach and how they want to do things. And Jimmy Garoppolo can now kind of be the conduit between Josh McDaniels and the team to understand the whys behind some of the things that are necessary in the preparation process. That's very important. the other thing that he brings besides that familiarity is the experience and the expertise. This is a guy that has been a two-time Super Bowl champion. He was there in New England as a backup, but he knows what it looks like to win at a high level. He went to a Super Bowl with the San Francisco 49ers as a starting quarterback. When you look at his record, it's really exemplary when he's had an opportunity to start games. When he's not been sidelined for injuries, he's been an outstanding quarterback throughout his time in the National Football League. And, you know, we can talk about what he does as a thrower because he does have accuracy. He does throw with touch, timing, and anticipation, works really well over the field. But one of the best things that he brings to the team is leadership ability and his ability to cooperate, meaning the quarterback room is going to be better with Jimmy Garoppolo in there because he's a veteran who's seen a bunch of different things throughout the league, but he's always been willing to help. I think one of the reasons why he was so beloved in San Francisco was the way that he handled the situation with Trey Lance. Trey Lance was drafted as a top pick. Knowing that your replacement is in the building, he still was willing to help and share while also being ready to play, and he had that opportunity to play. I think when you're the Raiders and you're looking at what he brings, he brings a bunch of intangible qualities that should lead to winning. And some of that winning is due to his ability to play, but also his ability to lead.
Feels great, baby. Jimmy Garoppolo joining the Las Vegas Raiders. Of course, he and George Kittle, you know, best of friends and really got a kick out of each other. And was fun to watch, you know, their friendship. And it's not just with George. I think you see, and I'm glad you touched on that with Jimmy, teammates love him. Teammates adore him. And there's a reason why in the awkwardest of situations, Jimmy's cool. Like Jimmy is cool as a cucumber in all situations. Now, he never led the league in passing, but what he did lead the league in is dealing with awkward situations. Just yes. In San Francisco the last 3 years, you know, you go back to, you know, being a connection with Emmanuel Sanders deep down the middle of the field and a ball that was overthrown that might have given San Francisco another Lombardi trophy, to now being talked about, you know, in very short order as being replaceable. He took his franchise to a Super Bowl, right? And I think, you know, the system is one thing that worked against Jimmy in that regard in San Francisco, you know, because you talk about the idea of him being a joystick quarterback in Kyle Shanahan's system. How is that different with what Josh McDaniels has done in the past, both with Jimmy in New England and what we've seen from him now in this past year with the Raiders?
Yeah, there'd be some differences. Some of the differences in the Shanahan system and what he'll be asked to do with the Raiders will focus really on like the movement-based passing game. With the San Francisco 49ers, Jimmy was asked to execute a lot of misdirection, play-action passes. Everything stemmed off the run action. The run action mirrored the pass action. And so you always put the defense in conflict in that regard. Some under center, some shotgun, but it was a lot of turn your back to the defense, half roll, and then find open targets right in between the numbers. And so a lot of in-breaking routes that, you know, were targeted inside the numbers. And Jimmy Garoppolo does that really well. What we've seen going all the way back to his days with the Patriots, when Josh McDaniels had him, they spread the ball out. They spread formations. They got it out. Quick rhythm passing game. A lot of the things that he did at Eastern Illinois, that's what he was asked to do early during his time with the Patriots.
And thrived.
Yeah, thrived. And a lot of it was, I mean, catch, rock, throw. Ball is out. Put the ball in the hand of the playmakers. They were going to stress the defense by spreading the formation out, trying to find one-on-one situations that work for them. And then it was really, really easy for the young quarterback at the time, Jimmy Garoppolo, to get the ball out of his hands and allow the weapons to do the work. You can do very, very similar things with the Raiders. You now think about Devontae Adams, Hunter Renfro. You bring over Jacoby Myers, who also understands that system.
Sure.
You'll see a lot of creative things that they're able to do to move the ball down the field. And so if you're Josh McDaniels and you're looking at the free agent market landscape at quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo had to be the number one option because the experience, the familiarity, and the winning pedigree, all those things stand out.
And now we look, knowing what's happened here with Jimmy and coming over in free agency, we look again ahead towards the draft. And the fact that he's there and has been in a situation like this before, while, you know, in Jimmy's case, it may not be something that you're looking forward to, but you could very well be talking about another first-round quarterback coming in here whether that's at seven, whether that's a move up or a move down, depending on which quarterback you like and which one you feel like you got to go get and which represents the best value. You're going to be talking about the potential for Jimmy again being a placeholder. And I don't mean that in a negative sense. Like, I just think that that's just one way to look at it when you've got a quarterback that you potentially spent high draft capital on. And so among those quarterbacks are some of the three that we've seen this week: CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Will Levis. Now, with the first two, and we're still going to dig into them because who knows how this thing shakes out in the next 4 to 5 weeks before April 27th. You're talking about CJ Stroud, Bryce Young in conversation to be 1 and 2 in some way, shape, or form. So I think that, you know, let's dig in there and let's start with the way that we started this week on the Pro Day circuit. CJ Stroud. Because I think actually when we first did this, this first episode, we mocked CJ Stroud to the Raiders at 7. Kind of unsure as to how it was all going to play out with the Bears at number 1. Now the Panthers are at 1, Texans at 2. Maybe there's an opportunity for a trade up at number 3. And I know we're going to go over in the next couple of weeks here in our podcast before we get to the draft, the myriad scenarios that Dave Ziegler could employ to, you know, find a quarterback here or to find great value at number 1. And we'll dig into all those potential scenarios. But let's just start with the players that are in consideration here and what we saw in this pro day. CJ Stroud in Columbus one more time. What did it do for you?
He's fantastic. I mean, he is the prototypical quarterback that has played and dominated in this league for a long time. Classic dropback thrower, a guy who has what we call like easy arm talent in terms of every throw looks easy. He puts it consistently within the strike zone. He can make every throw that you want a franchise quarterback to be able to make. And he just makes it look so easy and effortless when he does it. When you go back and you think about what he kind of left us with when we saw him in the playoff game against Georgia, he showed us the ability to make all those throws, but then he also added the element of the escapability. We saw more of the athleticism, more of the running skill that people have longed for. And so when you go back to his pro day, now he just reminded us of how talented he is just as a natural thrower from the pocket. This guy has a tremendous amount of ability, and he certainly kind of confirmed his ability to be the number one overall pick because he is really that good when you watch him in action.
Yeah, and it does feel like you're going to have to move up to get CJ Stroud. And, you know, the interesting thing for me in following his career arc at Ohio State, you know, I go back to his first game starting. Hostile environment, Minneapolis, taking on Minnesota. Minnesota was a good team that year. This is 2 years ago. And he had never started a game in college. Obviously, he had been in some big time situations as a high school player and was a highly thought of recruit. We all know that. So he comes out and did not play well in the first half of that game, which, again, is to be expected for a guy playing in his first college game ever. And halftime hits and Minnesota is feeling it like they got Ohio State. And it feels like on the ropes. And then in the second half, CJ Stroud comes out and you're like, oh, my goodness, it is clear why he won this job. And sure, Ryan Day probably helped the head coach at Ohio State put him in some favorable situations. He had some great receivers in Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Jackson Smith and Jigba. And so I watched him dart that thing up. I mean, like they, you know, those receivers were getting separation. He was, again, the superpower of ball placement was on display. And so then I think about that game and how it also kind of represented a career arc for CJ Stroud. So phenomenal first season. Sure, they lose to Michigan, but man, does he ball out in the Rose Bowl. I mean, the best performance by a quarterback in a Rose Bowl we have ever seen. 500 and some passing yards, the touchdowns. I mean, his name is tattooed like on the sideline where he was dotting up some of those fades that he was throwing at Jackson Smith and Jigba. Remember, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave didn't play in that game. They had opted out. They were going to the draft. And then we come back and there's still in the summer, this negativity kind of surrounding CJ Stroud. Like he lost to Michigan. Ohio State doesn't lose to Michigan. You know, they won however many times it was and were almost for a decade straight. They'd won, they dominated Michigan. CJ Stroud, first Ohio State quarterback in almost a decade to lose to Michigan. And there's this negativity surrounding it. And I felt like it forced an emotional maturity within CJ Stroud that maybe we hadn't seen and maybe he hadn't needed up until that point. And I think when you came out in this past year, you saw a more emotionally aware player, a guy who grew up and was forced to, you know, was given great responsibility and thrived with that great opportunity. And, you know, like it wasn't the most spectacular statistical season, still had a phenomenal year. And then like the year before, you know, they lost to Michigan, but there's a lot of factors there. And then he comes out in the college football playoff. And so you're talking now college football playoff, Rose Bowl, two of the biggest, you know, the biggest spotlights, and he shines the brightest. And I'm starting to see a face of the franchise develop here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you absolutely are. I think when we're looking at quarterbacks, some of the best things that you can do in evaluating them is watching them after they have poor performances or poor moments.
Yeah.
What is their response after critical errors? And so you're Ohio State. The worst thing that you can do as the starter for the Buckeyes is lose to the Michigan Wolverines.
Yes.
When he had that situation the first time, he goes to the Rose Bowl, and we see him play the best game that we've ever seen him play.
The response, right?
And the response was exceptional. The response without the top two wide receivers was fantastic, because you got to remember, going back to that game, Marvin Harrison Jr. was an unknown commodity who kind of showed up and showed
out. He was a ranking, right?
Yes. Jackson Smith and Jigba was still there, but, you know, it was still the Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson show, so you just didn't know what that was going to look like. They dominated the game. C.J. Stroud was on point. He was on target. He played well. He did those things. Fast forward this year, they lose to Michigan again. He then has an opportunity. Everything, all the negativity. It's a month of just chaos and people questioning how good they can be. They kind of backdoor their way into the playoffs. And so now they have an opportunity to play the defending national champions, and he carves them up. I mean, just absolutely.
Like no one else had, really. Like
with surgical precision, the way that he played, the way that he moved around, just the combination of his arm talent, his legs, how precise he was. Well, now you begin to view a special player, and you wish that you had more of those moments to catalog. But after two embarrassing losses, he played at a level that we haven't seen. To me, that bodes well for his ability to play at a high level in the National Football League, because we know he has the resilience and the grit and the toughness to be able to bounce back.
No question. And so, look, you're talking about a high level prospect. You're talking about a guy very much in play for the number one overall pick and to be that first quarterback. Stranger things have happened, you know, and maybe we see him still on the board at number three. And maybe there's an opportunity then for somebody like the Raiders, if they so choose, to go up and make a move for a player like that, which then brings us to another kind of interesting comparison point, because you kind of expertly brought this up when we were at the combine and talking about the ability to see high level quarterback prospects throw back to back to back to back to back, right? Rep to rep. You don't see that anywhere else, really. And so we didn't get to see that with Bryce Young, because he did not throw at the combine. He did throw this week at his pro day. And again, as advertised, an affirmation, I think, was the theme of the pro day week, right? Everything you loved about these players, you saw from these players in these workouts. And, you know, for Bryce, though, it did give us an opportunity to see him throw after C.J. Stroud. But I think one of the things that we learned from that, Bucky, is that they're very similar in that they are low blood pressure players, right? Now, they can speed it up when they have to, especially Bryce. But I mean, these are dudes that are virtually unfazed. How did you kind of see the contrast in comparison there?
I love the contrast. I love the way that you bring that up, because they both are super cool, super chill when it comes to playing the game. We talked about it on the shows, business-like approaches. Both of these guys carry themselves like franchise quarterback, because it's all business. And Red, if you want a team that is consistent, the leadership has to be consistent. And what we know from both of those guys, but in particular Bryce Young, very consistent in his daily approach, very consistent in his emotional control, the way that he goes about everything, planning, processing, performing. Man, he just checks off a lot of boxes. And then when you had an opportunity to watch him perform at his workout, same deal. Very consistent, low revving motor. Didn't change. The moment wasn't too big, even though we talked about the pressure that was on him at having to follow what C.J. Stroud put up the day before. Man, he crushed it. He knocked it out the park. The conversation that everyone will have with these two guys is, which one do you like the most? Do you like the prototypical prospect with the size, the arm talent, even the winning pedigree in C.J. Stroud? Or do you like the guy that has a little more magic in his game and Bryce Young? Can't really go wrong either way, but both of these guys, both of them, if we were giving out stars like we're giving kids homework, both of these guys go with five stars in the column because they both are outstanding prospects. Bryce Young was in particularly impressive as well.
To close the book on Bryce, one of the biggest, you know, headlines in terms of, you know, perceived negatives, of course, is the size at just over 5'10", 204 pounds at the combine. If you'd have stepped on the scale in Tuscaloosa this week, might not have hit that two Bills mark, but you know, that the height is not as much of the concern. Mm-hmm. We've seen players with, you know, that are quote unquote vertically challenged in terms of typical quarterback norms still succeed. Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Kyler Murray. But it's the narrowness of the frame. And then you do go back to the durability there, because that's ultimately what this comes down to. And yeah, he got hurt last year, but it was on a play where he was scrambling out. And it's not like he just took a monster hit in the pocket. He's taken plenty of those and got up and been just fine. But it was not like a contact injury. He just kind of landed funny on his shoulder. So the durability thing doesn't bother me as much. But how do you think teams are assessing the size there when it comes to Bryce Young?
It's a debate. It's a struggle. It's a struggle for scouts that are pro Bryce Young to convince some of the old school traditionalists that you can be okay with a smaller guy that doesn't check off the boxes when it comes to those prototypical dimensions. It's troubling because you watched him play in the SEC, and you guys talked so much about watching tape together and watched him take like 15 shots that would have been
shots.
Penalties or ejections or things that you just don't want to see your quarterback take, but he bounced up every time. He's special. He's special as a player. He's special as a playmaker. Great instincts and awareness. He does a great job of taking pre-snap information and finding a way to use it against you to really exploit it post-snap. He does all those things. I mean, he's a coach's dream when it comes to his preparation, his focus, his ability to play at a high level when that high level is demanded and required from the quarterback. There's a lot to like about him, man. It's hard to find negatives outside of the slender frame and the fact that he won't measure in at 205 or 210 pounds when it comes down to it.
Yeah. But what you're getting is a playmaker. You really are. And so you hear some of the buzz about, you know, the Panthers at one and wanting a playmaker at the quarterback spot, but also knowing Frank Reich's, you know, background with big prototypical quarterbacks, you're like, oh man, what, you're trying to read the tea leaves here. It kind of gets a little bit difficult, but that's such is the case this time of year when you're getting some of those smoke signals and some of those mixed signals as you hear some of the buzz around town. But certainly expect, you know, you would need to make a move up if you're the Raiders here to try to get one of those two top level prospects if that's something you truly desire. Now, where it gets really interesting is the final of the back-to-back-to-back three quarterback pro days this week that we just saw. As we're getting this podcast rolling here, and that was Will Levis from Kentucky, because there is a wide ranging of opinions there as you hear both about the evaluation and then Bucky about where he would fall in terms of the first round layout and landscape in Kansas City. So talking about the location of the draft, not with the Chiefs, obviously. But looking at that now, let's start with the evaluation part. Everything you love on tape about Will in terms of his passing ability, you saw at this workout, which was what? Power thrower, RPMs behind that ball, and there's no throw he can't make.
Yeah, he's another specimen, big physical power quarterback. And the reason we call him power quarterback, because you're really making reference to his ability to kind of run as a power runner when he takes off on design quarterback runs or execute zone reads and keepers and those things. Talented, super talented. I mean, range is limitless in terms of being able to throw the ball down the field, keep it on the dance floor, allow his guys to work past people on vertical routes. You add that element to your playbook when he comes over. I would say he's a work in progress as an accurate passer, and he may dispute it and say people don't know what they're looking at, but there's something to be said for the scatteredness of his throws, the poor decision-making, the turnover woes, all of those things that have really made it hard for some teams to go all the way in on him being a first-round pick. That said, it's easy to see the similarities between he and Josh Allen. You can see what Josh Allen came into the league as. You saw him develop and improve every year. And then after senior year, he cashing in. This is an opportunity for Will Levis to follow a similar blueprint. Someone sees him, someone installs an offense around his talents. He grows a little bit each year. And now you're sitting here saying that maybe you've uncovered a top 10 talent because he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game.
Yeah. And again, there's a very real possibility that he is off the board with the third pick or in the top five, you know, which in that point, if not for a trade out, a trade up would shut the Raiders out in terms of that possibility. But again, it is a possibility one way or another for Will Levis to find his way to Las Vegas. So we continue kind of looking at that possibility, certainly. And look, I think you're right about the perceived weaknesses there. I think you do see some of that. You talk about the 10 interceptions this past year, you know, a good amount of those coming in the red zone, mm-hmm. you know, which is a money area, right? You got to find 6 points here, or you at least got to leave with three. Can't turn it over down there and get shut out, right? And that's kind of, you know, that was something you saw a number of times this year. The sacks is something, you know, to consider. Sure, you had a bunch of guys get drafted off the offensive line. Get it. Mm-hmm. Offensive coordinator turnover. I get that, you know, and all that stuff, I think you got to factor in. And here's the thing that I think teams, you know, perhaps might look at when you are talking about the Josh Allen comparison. Josh worked a lot of that stuff out of his game mm-hmm. at the next level. He worked a lot of that inaccuracy stuff we saw at Wyoming, where he was, what, a 50% passer in terms yes. of completion. He worked that out of his game. Now, was it all his doing, or was it because of fit with Brian Daboll and the Buffalo Bills system at that time? I think you could see that type of thing with the way that Josh McDaniels can mm-hmm. scheme and generate offensive production by finding some minimal risk out there. You know, he got a ton of production out of Mac Jones as a rookie, you know, in New England. And so, like, I think that you can find ways to get comfortable, right, with what Will has out there and all of, you know, the qualities that surround his draft profile, both positive and negative, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that you can take from the work, a lot of things you can take from Will Levis and say, okay, here's where he was. Here's where he was at early in his career. Here's how he evolved over time, even though he yeah. transferred from one spot to another. Here's what we can do with him if we get him in our system. We can utilize a run game. We can utilize a quarterback design run game with some RPOs littered in it. We can use a more vertical pass attack. So when we do throw off play action, we're pushing it down the field, trying to score touchdowns instead of just accumulating a gang of first downs. Those things are achievable. And so it's a matter of his temperament. Does he have the temperament to go to work? Can he be a grinder, much like Jalen Hurts was? Can he become legendary in terms of his preparation process? Because if he pours into it, there is going to be an opportunity for him to be able to take advantage of being maybe a pick that is higher than most guys would kind of rate him at this stage of the year in previous years.
Yeah. Look, I think that's, you know, I think that's a phenomenal point as well here. And I think there's a lot to like about Will Levis. I think we'll continue to learn more about him. And I think that's what teams are trying to do now too. He's kind of a fun guy to be around. He was clearly having a good time at the workout. And look, if you follow his TikTok, you know, I think he'll find some restaurants of his liking in Las Vegas if he does end up as the next Raiders signal caller from this draft. But look, I think that there's some possibilities there. I think you can start to envision some things with Will Levis and the way that you want to use him. And then, you know, you also have to then decide, is he the next guy behind CJ Stroud and Bryce Young, or is that Anthony Richardson, who we're going to see, you know, next week and who we're going to talk about next week in our Raiders NFL Draft podcast once we finish up with Anthony Richardson's pro day. And so as a quick primer for that one, Bucky, before we get out of here on this episode, a lot of the things that you love about Will Levis, you're going to see from Anthony Richardson, mm-hmm. except maybe double time in terms of arm strength.
Yeah, you got a lot of similarities between two players. And we've talked about this. If we're looking at the top four or five quarterbacks in the thing, there's separation between the first two and then the next two. And we'll say the next two are, you know, Anthony Richardson and Will Levis.
Hendon Hooker's in there, right?
I think Hendon Hooker's in there. I would rate him in my top five. I have him at number three in terms of how he plays on tape. The issue will be the knee. and how long does it take him to come back and recover from the knee, and is he the same guy, and all those other things. With Anthony Richardson and Will Levis, I mean, you're gambling. I mean, you're rolling the dice on these guys, and you're hoping that you kind of find a way out on the crap table. This is something that's interesting with Richardson, more dynamic, more explosive, stronger athlete than Cam Newton. And we saw that Cam Newton had a way in terms of being able to physically control and dominate the game. Richardson didn't do it to that level at Florida, but he only was a one-year starter. And so you wonder, what would he have been able to do if he stayed another year, if he stuck around and gave himself a chance to kind of dominate the college game? We'll never know, but the tools are intriguing. There are a lot of people that are waiting to see what he does in terms of throwing it. Does he put defense out there? What is he looking for? But it's a great time. The school's excited. Everyone should be excited to see Anthony Richardson go do his deal, because the more quarterbacks that we're able to talk about at the top of the board, the more good players land in the laps of others who are outside of that top five.
Yeah. And look, and again, that's one of those scenarios for Las Vegas sitting at number seven as it currently stands. Four quarterbacks go in the top five. Think about the great, you know, you might get the best offensive lineman off the board at number seven. You might get, you know, one of the top three defensive players off the board at number seven. And then maybe you use 38, come back in, find yourself one of the other quarterbacks that's there. Maybe that is a Hendon Hooker. Or maybe you can just stick and pick at 38 and get a player like Hendon Hooker, depending on where that goes. So I think there's still so many options, and we're going to continue to dive into all of them over the course of the next month as we continue down this path to the draft, which kicks off April 27th in Kansas City. We got a lot more episodes and a lot more content coming your way. Be sure to check us out over on Raiders.com and right here on the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. For Bucky Brooks, I'm Rhett Lewis. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Raiders NFL Draft Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the Raiders Podcast Network wherever you get your podcasts.
The Las Vegas Raiders have partnered with the global lifestyle app TrueConnect to give the gift of wellness. Transform your mind, body, and soul through thousands of hours of premium fitness content, guided meditations, progress tracking, and more. Visit tcfree.fit to redeem one free year of TrueConnect exclusively for Raider Nation.